everyone. Welcome to the Racing Writers Podcast. I'm your host, Kelly Crandall. This week, I've got another great conversation for you with Xfinity Series driver Josh Williams. And when I was editing this one back, it got me laughing once again, as I did when Josh and I were talking, because he's a great character and he's someone that I'm really glad I finally got to interact with. Of course, I know who Josh is, been covering him for a few years now. He's driving that 92 machine from Mario Gosselin, doing great things in the Xfinity Series for that budget, what that team is capable of. Josh made his first start back in 2016, and now he's full-time the last couple years and has slowly been working his way further and further up the leaderboard when it comes to the overall point standings. And again, just really glad to have him on the podcast. Josh and I are going to talk a little bit about his background, but you'll hear me mention in here that he actually gave a great recent interview on a podcast. So I didn't really want to do more of the same, but I kind of piggybacked off that conversation to pick out a few parts and pieces that I wanted Josh to further elaborate on. So we're going to talk a little bit about his background, but we're mostly going to talk about his career, what he's doing with the 92 team, if they're overachieving. As I mentioned, they've been top 20 in points the last couple years, which is great for them. Josh is going to share what he wants you to know about him, and that's really where I got laughing, is when he talks about he's your guy. And I don't want to give too much away of why he says that, so stick around for that. And we also go into Josh getting confused for the other Josh Williams that's in NASCAR. Maybe you've heard of him. He is the spotter for Ryan Blaney. Really enjoyed this conversation. Once again, Josh is a great character. He also does something really cool with hospital visits, and he's going to talk all about that. So let me get you to the interview. Here is Josh Williams on the Racing Writers Podcast. No, I completely understand. Listen, I've done Zooms in my car, in closets. It's wherever you got to make it work, right?
Yeah, exactly. My workplace here is a little loud, so.
Exactly, it is. So you said you're in Concord. You got a shop out there.
Yep. Yeah, we do all of our development stuff here. So we do everything from like Bandoleros, Legends, late models, sportsman cars. We do all kinds of crazy stuff, so.
You know, I was going to ask about that because I had heard in a previous interview where you said you were getting back into doing some Bandolero and Legend stuff as your own driver development program. Basically, I'm just curious of kind of how you approach driver development. Obviously, so many different teams and manufacturers have something like that. What's your approach to doing something with drivers?
So our deal is we try to make it affordable for everybody. And, you know, motorsports cost money regardless what you're doing. So we just try to be a little bit cheaper than everybody else and give them the same quality. I guess the difference between us and some of the bigger teams is we don't have two houses in Charlotte, one on the lake. We don't have a jet. We don't have 50 employees. So, you know, we can do a little bit more with less. So that's kind of what we try to do here at JW Motorsports is kind of stretch your dollar out just a little bit farther so you can race a little bit longer.
Yeah, I like that philosophy because it seems like that's your philosophy just in general is try to do more with less, not just in teaching other drivers how to do that. But that's really been the story of your career, right? Is make it last and you can probably go further.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and that's hard to do. That's so hard to do. And it's getting harder and harder. I mean, there's so much money that floats around, you know, with some of these drivers that they have. And it's insane because, I mean, they get first pick. You know what I mean? It's easy for them to just walk in the door somewhere they want to go and say, hey, I'm here to drive. Here's my money and stuff. So just got to be better than those guys. And, you know, sometimes in return, you know, some of the bigger teams might help you out a little bit if you don't have the exact amount of funding that you need. So I guess, you know, money always wins, but sometimes talent will get you a little better deal.
At least that's the hope, is that there's still a place for talent in the sport.
Yeah. I wish we could. I always said that I was born way too late. Like I missed it. I missed the whole talent era. So hopefully we can spin that back around and bring it full circle.
There you go. Positive mental philosophy. I'm curious, Josh, how many different hats do you wear? Obviously you're a driver, but I feel like you're one of those. You also get your hands dirty. You just said you're doing some driver development. How many different hats do you wear? What are you doing on a weekly basis?
The only thing I don't do is I don't build gears. I don't build motors. I don't build transmission. Everything else we can do. I built chassis before from the ground up, built a lot of my own stuff when I was younger, and that's the way I was taught. You know, I was taught if you didn't work on them, you couldn't drive them. So that's just the way that I've been my whole career. And I don't know. I feel like even if I was with a big time team, they'd try to kick me out of the shop because I'd be in there trying to do something. So.
Yeah, I know you gave a great interview with Davey Siegel recently, so I don't want to go too much into what you've already talked about, but I did have some more stuff I wanted to know about you just based off of things you had said to him. And one of the things that stood out was you said that your family custom built you a go-kart when you were about two. And first off, that's awesome. But second of all, how does a two-year-old, do you remember, like, did you know what to do? How does a two-year-old know how to use a go-kart?
So my dad was a racer, just a short track guy in Indiana and in South Florida. And everybody had power wheels. I didn't have power wheels. I had a go-kart. So basically, like, I would steer, of course, but he would actually ride, like, on the side of it and work the throttle. And I don't remember a lick of it because it was, you know, like, forever ago. But, yeah, it was pretty cool. I was a cool kid. I had a go-kart.
Your dad was a racer, as you said. Do you remember watching him at all when you were younger? So naturally, it was in the family. You were exposed to it early on. But what do you remember?
My dad was, like, the local short track badass. He, back in the day, you know, he worked all week long. He raced on Saturdays and he did fishing tournaments on Sundays, you know, so we could pay the bills. And if you were leading and he was second on Saturday night, we had to make that mortgage payment. So you were probably getting shoved up the hill. It was fun to watch. He was kind of like the Kyle Busch. Like, everybody loved him, but there was no in the middle. You hated the guy cause he won, or you loved him cause he won. And, I remember one night he won, like, this championship. They had, like, a 10-race series, and it was in Modifieds in Florida. And he won the championship, won the race, qualified on the pole. These people were throwing full beer cans at this man on the front stretch. So he, like, turned around, and he took the microphone from the announcer while he was still in the car. Like, he got the checkered flag, did his little victory deal, did a burnout, grabbed the microphone. And he takes the microphone and he says, can you guys please throw Budweiser? And gave the guy the microphone back. So, I mean, he was just, dude, he's a legend. He's a legend, man. So, yeah, I learned a ton from him. And motorsports was just something that we always did. You know, I played regular sports, but I hated them. God, they were just so boring. So I just wanted to race. That's it. That's all I wanted to do.
What sports did you play?
I played baseball and basketball. But it just, the baseball thing, I gave that up way quick. Because, I mean, I was younger. So at that age, it's like, they usually never even hit the ball. So it's like, you just stood there. And I'm like, this is terrible. So I gave that up quick. Basketball was fun because, you know, you got to move around and do stuff. But that kind of got in the way of racing. So it was either go play basketball or race. So I was like, we'll go race.
Right. So naturally, having a dad that raced, and you just said that he was kind of a badass short track racer there, you have credited him with teaching you basically how to be a racer. That had to have been special that you could pick up on stuff from dad. And dad, it sounds like, was successful. So he's kind of been, I guess, the biggest influence.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. We'd be driving down the road. I'd be like seven. We'd be driving down the road. He's like, all right. He's like, now you got to get right here on their left rear. And you just kind of move. I'm like, dad, we're on the road, bro. Like, chill out. He's like, oh, it'll be fine. I was like, oh, okay. But no, I mean, he'll call me and right before, you know, race or whatever, he's like, all right. He says, you know, just nobody's your friend out there. You got to be careful. You got to watch your front end, you know, protect your fenders. He says, you know, just, you know what to do. And I'm like, yeah, I've been doing this since I was four. Like, I got it, bro. You know what I mean? But all the time, man, all the time. So it was, he's probably my biggest critic too. I can't do anything wrong or he'll tell me about it on Sunday.
It sounds almost like he gets more invested sometimes in what you have going on than you are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, like every time after the race, like when I get out of the car, go grab my phone or whatever, I'll holler. And he's already sent me a screenshot of like what my best lap was, what lap it was on. I got like a 2-page text on, well, why did you take 4 tires? You should have took 2. I'm like, dude, like we got this. Just chill out a little bit. But, dude, he's so on it, man. He's a racer. He is a full-blown racer.
Right. What about mom? Going back to the podcast you did with Davey, I believe you said when you got that go-kart, you said that she was, quote, pissed off.
Yeah.
So has mom come around to the whole racing idea?
Oh, yeah. 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 My mom loves it. She used to film every one of my races from the grandstands. And the whole go-kart on Christmas thing, when I was little, she wasn't mad about it. She was mad at the fact that we started it inside the house. And it was just like one wheel drive. So like the right rear tire was the only thing that spun. Well, like dad's over here revving it up in the house, doors closed, Christmas morning, and the right rear tire was spinning and it actually like burnt a square in the carpet. Ooh, she was pissed. She was so mad. I really don't remember it, but I've told the story so many times. I feel like I remember it. And I can see it in my head. But I mean, she loves it. She's always been supportive, and you know, she's she texts me every time before we get in the race car. Be careful. You know, it's, all right. So she loves it. She loves it. Sometimes she might hate it, but she loves it deep down.
It's great though to have that family support. And again, when you come from a family of racers, people who understand it, they can be your support system. And again, be so invested in it that they want to text you or call you. They're keeping such close eye. That has to feel good too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. We traveled all over the country from the time that, you know, I was seven racing quarter midgets until we stopped in 2016 running the ARCA deal as a family owned team. We went everywhere. I mean, we've been from Florida, North Carolina, Georgia, Vegas, Wisconsin. We've been all over together as a family, you know, riding up down the road and traveling. So, I mean, it's cool. A lot of these, and that's kind of part of the development deal. It's like, I tell these parents, I'm like, listen, you can't get the experiences you're going to get with your kids without doing motorsport. It's crazy. You get to travel all over. I mean, you could travel doing baseball or basketball or whatever, but you're hands-on. You know, you can help your kid get in the car or even work on it or, you know, run up and down the road and tow the trailer. So that's how I was raised. You know, we did it as a family. So I like to include the families in this deal too.
Go-karts, legend cars, you won the 2005 Bandolero Championship. You've got a couple ARCA wins. At what point was your family no longer able to support you? Because you said there you did race as a family for a long time. At what point did you have to start trying to do it on your own because your family just couldn't anymore?
Yeah, basically right there, you know, 2016, when we really went after it and gave it all we had in the ARCA deal, and we got our two wins, and, you know, we were competing for a championship. We legitimately had a shot at it. So right there, it was like, all right, this is it. You know, what do we do now? And we kind of tried to figure some things out and build some relationships in the NASCAR world. And here we are. You know, we're racing full time on Saturdays, and they get to go to the lake and enjoy themselves. So that's cool.
Your dad was a big supporter of you moving to North Carolina, that if you were going to do this, you had to get there. He basically, the way you told it, again, it was really funny. Of it almost sounded like something my dad did, which was just push you out of the house. You got to go. You got to do it. Explain. Yeah. Go through that story, because again, he was a big supporter of, you can't stay here. You're going to have to go and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that was the thing. It's like, you know, we knew from racing legends cars, we come up here, run the summer shootout. And I mean, we're around a lot of people that we're really good friends with. I talked about the Reagans a lot, and I was turning 15, and high school was sending letters like, hey, you're going to fail if you don't show up. And like, what are we going to do? And mom's like, well, you got to go to school. And dad's like, well, can't we do something different? Because I didn't want to go. I wanted to race. I mean, I love school. You know, I have my high school diploma, but I did it all online. So, you know, I went my freshman year and my sophomore year. And then after that, that was it. No more. Did the rest online. So he's like, listen, you got to go to North Carolina. So we kind of made a plan that we were going to do the ARCA deal, and got involved with Barry Owen. And so I packed the biggest suitcase that I could find and got my stuff, and I flew here. And I lived at Barry's for a while, lived in our family's motorhome in campgrounds or beside the shop or whatever for a long time. I've slept on floors and couches and all kinds of stuff. But the first time I ever got up here, Barry picked me up from the airport, and he's got this old blue Chevrolet truck. So he picks me up at the airport, and we're driving back to Lexington, North Carolina, where his shop's at. We get pulled over. No seatbelts. I don't even know where they're at. Like, can't even find them. And I'm like, Barry, where's the seatbelts? He's like, I haven't used a seatbelt in this truck in 25 years. And I'm like, oh, my God. So we get pulled over. I get a ticket. I haven't been here for, like, 30 minutes in North Carolina, and I get a ticket for not having a seatbelt. I don't even have a driver's license. I have a permit. My mom was mad once again. So it's like, you send him up there, he's got a ticket. And I'm like, oh, man. So that was my first experience moving to North Carolina, is I got a seatbelt ticket.
Welcome to your new home. Here's a ticket. You don't even have your driver's license yet. So how old were you then if you only had a permit? You're still a teenager.
Yeah, I was 15. Like, I just turned 15. So that was cool, man. Moving up here and kind of living with somebody else and being away from your family. And I mean, it's kind of tough at the beginning, but I got used to it after a while and it was fun. I mean, I got to build race cars and go to the shop every day and learn a lot learn a lot about just life in general, stuff that you can't learn in school. So I got a head start on that program.
That real world experience, as people like to say. Yeah. You're not going to get that in a classroom. Going back to what I just listed about go-karts to Legends, Bandoleros, ARCA, at what point did you start to think about the possibility of trying to do it in NASCAR, of trying to get to NASCAR and make a living doing this?
I'd probably say like 2012, somewhere in there. I got to do some stuff with GMS. Maury Gallagher took care of me there for a while, really helped me out and kind of elevated my ARCA career. And, you know, I helped Spencer out a little bit. We did some stuff back and forth together. And I was like, man, I always want to race. You know, I always wanted to make it to NASCAR, but the reality of what is it going to take kind of set in probably 2012, 2013, somewhere there. It's like, all right, this is a lot harder than it looks. Like you have to have, there's so many items that you have to have together and you just got to learn the business side of things. And motorsports is really a business. It's not really a hobby or a job. You know, it's a full blown business model. So had to learn that and I just never quit. You know what I mean? I never gave up ever.
Exactly. You have, as we talk, you have 120 starts now. It's been quite a few years you've put in the Xfinity series. You get connected with Mario, doing some great things over there. It seems like, or to me, it seems like you guys maybe are overachieving a little bit. You were 17th in points in 2019. You were 15th last year. You're sitting inside the top 20 again. Is that overachieving or where should the team be? What should we expect when we see you guys on track?
I mean, I think for our budget, we really should be somewhere in 25th. In reality, that's where we should be, you know, but we're really doing more with less. Like you said before, that's kind of been our MO. And I wish it wasn't that way, you know, to make things a little bit easier, but it just makes you feel good. Like Bristol, you know, we ran side by side with a Stewart Haas car for 15 laps and then passed them and drove away from them. Like we shouldn't do that. That just shouldn't exist. And it does, you know? So it's like, heck yeah. Like we're badass, you know what I mean? Like, so it's cool to overachieve against a lot of these teams. I mean, there's so much money out there. They have so many resources and people, and it's crazy the amount of things that we're lacking on our end, and we're still doing good with it.
How much harder does it make, maybe just mentally make it, when you're the driver, but you know how hard it is to get that car to the racetrack, you're working on it, you're helping where you can help. How much harder does that just make it when it gets torn up or you have a bad day? Does that take a toll on you?
Yeah, I mean, stuff gets tore up. It's only metal. You know, they sell it every day. So, I mean, you just got to work on it. I guess the biggest thing for me is getting torn up in a situation that could have been avoidable. And that really aggravates me because a lot of these kids or drivers are full-blown adults that should have common sense. You know, like they don't look at it that way. They're like, oh, I got to go. You know what I mean? Because when they get back to the shop Monday morning, they got seven more of them sitting there brand new, ready to go. And we don't have that luxury. So that part really makes me angry more than anything else. Getting in wrecks and stuff, that's just part of it. But full-blown just losing your mind and tearing cars up, that aggravates me so bad.
It seems like it happens, I won't say a lot, but it happens quite a bit in the Xfinity series because the depth of the Xfinity series is so, it's so much now. There's a lot more competitive cars, it seems like. Plus you get one-off drivers coming in, drivers changing cars all the time. So it's just almost like a chaotic atmosphere in that Xfinity series, but it makes it fun to watch for us.
Oh, yeah. I'm telling you, I tell everybody, the Xfinity series is by far the best out of the three NASCAR series. It just is. We have the best cars. We've got the best aero package, the best motor package, you know, and we've got some really, really talented drivers, and there's a lot of good cars. This year has been tough, and I think next year, if you can finish in the top 20, you are considered a hero because it's going to be very tough. A lot of new teams, better equipment, more money, and it's going to be difficult next year, I think. Way, way more difficult than this year.
Right. And correct me if I'm wrong, but to me, it seems like you've been quite content, quite happy in the Xfinity series doing what you're doing and making it work.
Yeah. I've never left a series where I haven't won a race. So whatever it takes, you know what I mean? Whatever it takes. So we're definitely going to stay committed full time in the Xfinity Series until we can run up front and snag a win, you know what I mean? And a lot of people are like, oh, well, anybody can win Daytona and Talladega. Yeah, you're right, but you've got to make the right decisions. So maybe one Talladega.
Yeah. And you said a minute ago about with the roster, with the depth of the Xfinity Series, especially going into next year, how much more does it mean when you guys can, quote unquote, overachieve and go run the way you've been running? Because again, not only are you doing it against talented race car drivers, but when the cup drivers come down there and you're running against cup money when it comes to the Penske's and the, or a Dale Jr., which I want to get to him in a minute, but how much better does that feel when, again, you guys can go out there and be in the mix of all of these top teams?
Yeah, that's, I call it winning our class. So, I mean, if you could be that first guy that's not affiliated or doesn't have a ton of money, you won your class. You know what I mean? I call it the B team. So if we can win the B team, that's awesome. I think they should give trophies away for the B team because we'd have a pile of them. It's just, what, you know what I mean? Like even a participation ribbon, give us something. Cause I mean, we did good.
Yeah, we did. Exactly. It's always nice to be recognized for the hard work. And I think you've said that before that you wish that maybe, and I completely agree. I think that maybe if there could be more spotlight on mid-pack to further back in the pack on drivers and teams and what it takes, right? Like if people could just do a better job of highlighting what goes on back there.
Yeah. I mean, that's where the races are. Those guys are, that's where they run all the time. They run up front. That's where they're going to be. It's going to be the same guys every time, but we're chasing that top 20 in points and we're all chasing that one spot because the way that the structure works at the end of the year, the team gets paid. The top 20 teams get paid at the end of the year, you know, owner's points and driver's points. And 21st does not pay. We are all literally fighting each other. Like we will wreck our own mom to get to that 20th place at the end of the year. So that fight is so hard. And even all the way back in the lower 30s, you know, staying in the owner's points, top 36. So you get the bonus money for the purse. I mean, it's like, we're all fighting for that. And we're all fighting for the same thing. When we get to the racetrack, we understand, yeah, we're probably not going to the race today, but we need to beat everybody else. We need to win our class so we can stay where we need to be comfortable.
I think that's something really important that you hit on, which is so many fans or people get caught up in the fact of why are some of these teams here if they know they're not going to win a race? But as you just said, there's so much more that goes on in this sport that you just have to understand there's so much more at stake. And sometimes that might even be just paying your employees or putting food on the table, but everybody is racing for something.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, this is like Mario. This is Mario's full-time job. Like this is what he does. You know, he doesn't own some big company and decided that he wanted to start a race team. Like, he owns a race team. Like that's how he pays himself. That's how he pays for his house and his vehicles and, you know, his employees. Like this is it. There's no money coming from anywhere else, so you have to fight. I mean, you got to stay up late, you've got to travel across the country. I mean, everybody gets mad if a lap car gets in the way of the leader. Like, listen, there's plenty of racetrack. You don't have to run in the back of the lap car because usually we stay where we're at. You need to make the decision on where to go. So I don't know, man. I feel like some of the fans are kind of coming around to that. They're like, oh, okay, like I get it. Like these people are like, this is their livelihood, this is what they do for a living. And it's no different than waking up in the morning and clocking in at your 9 o'clock, 9 to 5. Like, it's no different. You know, we just don't really have hours. Whenever it's over, it's over.
You said there about racing the leaders, and I wanted to bring that up. Where do you feel like, Josh, you fall? Do you feel like you do a great job of being respectful if you are getting lapped, of knowing where the leaders are, knowing your place on the track? I can't recall there ever being an incident where your name has come up in a negative way. So do you feel like you do a good job of knowing where to put yourself on the racetrack?
Yeah, I feel like. I mean, there's certain situations at Bristol. Me and Brandon Brown were racing for 12th, 13th, 14th, somewhere in there. And it was late in the run. The race is almost over. And the leaders are catching us. You know, we're racing each other, kind of holding each other up. And the leaders are catching us. Well, if a caution comes out, one of us is going to get the lucky dog. So at that point in time, you got to race him, but you got to be respectful of the guys behind you as well. And unfortunately, we got taken out by the 8 car again, ironically. And, you know, it wasn't the 8's fault. It was actually the 7's fault. But, you know, it's just part of it. So, I mean, there's certain times where you got to kind of race the leaders hard to stay right there to get your lap back because it's so hard to get a lap back. I try to stay out of the way. I mean, there's no point in it. I mean, there's no point in, you know, them maybe wrecking you at being angry and ruining your day. So just give them room and let them go.
You got plenty of TV time, of course, in Richmond, racing around Dale Jr. You two had a run-in. That became a whole thing. I think at the end of the day, everybody enjoyed it. You guys laughed about it. You got to go on the Dale Jr. download. So first off, do you think that was just good in the sense of it did get you some attention? It got you, you know, spotlighted, of course, and maybe brought you a little bit more attention that people now know your name.
Yeah. I told everybody, I was like, man, if I knew it was going to be that big, I'd have, like, spun him out or something. But no, it was fun. And, you know, I think Junior has a being in the booth and being able to watch the entire race and how things play out and racing just kind of one or two times a year. I feel like he really has a respect for guys like us because he sees us from a different perspective now. You know what I mean? He's like, man, like these guys are really grinding hard and we're driving cars that they sold because they don't want to run them anymore because they don't think they're good enough. So, I mean, we're buying this used equipment and, you know, running side by side with them for 15, 20 laps. And it's like, I feel like that gives him definitely a better outlook on us as smaller teams. And he's definitely been showing us a lot of love, you know what I mean? And that goes a long ways. I mean, we have sponsors on our cars, just like the heroes, as I call them. So we need some of that exposure, you know, we need some of that spotlight from time to time because we're trying to get to the racetrack just the same as they are.
One of the things I thought was interesting when you went on the download and you talked to him is it sounded like you two already have a little bit of a previous relationship. And I didn't realize that because I think that's awesome. I think you were talking about either he repairs the cars or you said you buy the cars or parts and pieces from them.
Yeah. Yeah. We buy some cars from Juniors and he posted a picture on Twitter of one of my Speedway cars in their fab shop. They were doing some body work on it for us. And I was like, oh man, I was like, this guy. I always talk crap to him before because during a Daytona race, we were like top five and got wrecked. And he called me the driver of the 92. He didn't say Josh Williams. So that kind of became the joke for a while. I was hashtag driver of the 92. So, yeah, it's fun, man. It's all fun. I don't care who it is. You know what I mean? It could be Kyle Busch, Dale Jr., Jimmy Johnson. It doesn't matter. It can be, you know, Alex LeBay. I mean, everybody's the same. I treat them all the same.
Yeah, I love the attitude. I love how you have fun with everything. You're enjoying what you get to do. I have a few more random things for you. But first off, Josh, what would you want people to know about you or to know about your story and or maybe your background or who you are?
I talk to a lot of people just traveling or out and about or even at the racetrack, different fans. And they always say the same thing. Yeah, we really don't watch racing anymore because there's not that old school guy, you know, like Dale Earnhardt or whoever it may be. And I'm like, listen, you need to turn TV on Saturday and watch the 92 car. I'm that guy. I'm your guy. I'll drive the truck to the racetrack, build the car, work on it, get out, change my own tires if I have to. Like, I'm that guy. And there's not a lot of that left in the sport. And I want to make it to the Cup Series and say, hey, I'm that guy. I'm your guy. I'm the one that will get out and fight on the front stretch in front of 30,000 people because you wrecked my race car. Like, I'm not going to shove your at you on Twitter and tell you we need to meet at Starbucks. Like, that's not me. Like, let's just do this. I mean, I want people to know that. There's still a kid out there that you can root for that's grandpa's, cousin, uncle's, mother's, brother's, sister, dog, didn't write a check so he can drive the race car.
I'm sure you already know this, but I have to bring it up because it cracks me up. But I'm sure you know if you Google Josh Williams NASCAR, that other guy, that spotter dude comes up. So how often are you confused with that other Josh Williams?
All the time. It's funny. When we were doing this whole Dale Jr. thing and some guy was on there and he was like, hey, is this the same Josh Williams that wrecks everybody on iRacing and then blames it on something else? And I was like, no, that's the spotter, Josh. And I tagged him on it. And he's actually spotted for me before. We got a good relationship. So we kind of – like when he wins with Blaney or whatever, I'll get congratulation tweets. And like, if I run good, like when I won my ARCA race, they were tagging him. He was sending it back to me. So it's been a fun game here the past couple of years.
I also wanted you to talk a little bit about the children's hospital visits I know you've done in the past. Are you still doing them? And if you can just give some background on to how that came to be, because it's a great program and maybe just how it affects you to do something like that.
Yeah. 2015, I believe it was 14, 15. Somewhere there, one of our mutual friends, they had someone that had a younger girl in the hospital fighting leukemia. And I was like, well, let's try to do something or whatever. And so we ended up going to, she called it her hospital. It wasn't anybody else's, it was hers. So we went to her hospital and did a visit with her. And while we were there, you know, we kind of interacted with everybody. And we left, and of course, we get in the parking lot, and me and my marketing agent, Megan, I was like, this is tough. Like, I mean, I'm like crying in the parking lot because everybody's like, oh man, I'm just having a bad day. And I look at them, I'm like, you have no idea what a bad day is.
Right.
Like, it's extremely tough. I mean, you know, you see these parents in there, they're concerned, you know, the kids, you know, some of them don't know why they're there, and they're just, you know, as happy as can be. And some of them know why they're there. And, you know, it's very tough. It's a tough deal to watch. And I was like, well, maybe we could just do this, you know, more or whatever. And we just started doing things and putting deals together and meeting the hospitals and going visit here, visit there, and just turned into this big thing that we just like to do. It's kind of funny. At the beginning, there really wasn't any, we didn't really post about it. We didn't do any of this. And there's some hospitals that we go to that nobody even knows we went there, you know, just because of policies with the hospital and things like that. And then you start seeing these other people pop up, you know, it's like, okay, way to be original, bro. You know, so it's fun. I love it. I tell my guys all the time, like, listen, y'all need to be thankful for what you got because you never know what's going to happen next. So I love it. I enjoy it. And I continue to do it. I mean, if I stopped racing tomorrow, I'd probably still find a way to be some type of interaction. I mean, I'll put an old suit on, roll in there. They might even think I'm Dale Jr. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter as long as I can brighten somebody's day.
And you are still doing it. I think during the pandemic, did you switch to doing it virtually, obviously?
Yeah, we had a little backdrop deal made. And, you know, I do the virtual visits here in the shop. And they still do, like, the activity that we do every time we go. So at the end of the year, the last race of the season, we do handprints while we're at the hospitals. You know, everybody gets to paint their hand different colors, whatever they want. And we put them on paper plates, and we take high-res images of them, and we put them into our wrap at the end of the year, last race of the season, with all the hospitals on it, you know, the kids' names and their handprints and all kinds of cool stuff. So they were still doing that. The hospitals would do the activity, and they would ship us the plates. So, I mean, they were all supportive of it as well, and it's pretty cool, man. You get to tell the kids, like, hey, your hand's going to be on a race car on TV, and they're like, oh, yeah, like, I'm going to be famous. So it's fun. It's a fun project, and I look forward to doing it every time.
That is one of my favorite, you know, hand to God. That is a great-looking race car when you've done that over the years, and it's very cool you're going to continue to do that. I like the fact that the mullet lives on. That's become, like, your signature now, man.
I know. Everybody's like, it's 50-50. Everybody's like, oh, you need to cut that off. And I'm like, I don't know. I kind of like it. I've had the same hairstyle cut since I was like, oh, this is different. You know, it's different, and I enjoy it. And other people enjoy it too, man. It's just trying to be different.
That's how you get recognized, though. That's how everybody knows, oh, there's Josh on pit road. You know, you got to have something.
Listen, you either grow long hair or you run into Dale Jr., one of the others. And I did both, so I got the whole package.
That's right. You're batting 1,000.
Some people are really offended about it still. So,
well, you know, that'll happen in big time auto racing, right? Hey, once again, all publicity is good publicity.
Yeah, I feel like I've made it. I actually got booed in Vegas on driver intros. I did. You'd have thought I won a Daytona 500. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. I was like, yes, yes. I mean, that's just cool. I mean, somebody noticed enough to take the time out of their day to be like, that's the guy that ran into Dale Jr. and booed me. And I accept it.
Once again, it's all about small victories. You take what you can get.
Take what you can get.
Josh, before I let you go, I wanted you to tell people where they can follow you. Because again, your name's getting out there more. You did a great podcast with Davey, as I said. I enjoyed this conversation. Where can people follow you or support you and the efforts of this Mario Gosselin team?
Josh Six Williams is my Twitter handle if you want all things controversial. You know, I also have I think it's JW Motorsports is my Facebook page, and then Instagram I think it's Josh Six Williams as well. So definitely follow the Twitter if you want all things controversial. I like having fun, man. You know what I mean? People were actually because I said something on Dale Jr.'s podcast about people arguing with me or whatever, and then at the end they usually follow. So I actually had people like trying to start arguments just so they could follow me afterwards. So it is pretty cool. I went along with it. It's fun.
Yeah, there you go. Like I said, you're living life, you're having fun, and you got some attention. That small victories, man.
Oh yeah, they all add up.
Josh, I've greatly enjoyed this. I appreciate you giving me some time today, coming outside the shop so we could have a great conversation. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. I got the minivan turned on with the air on high. I'm just living a dream out here.
I think Josh has probably picked up a few new fans after that interview, right? And how could you not? Again, what a great character. What a great interview. I love his energy. I love the attitude, the enthusiasm for racing, and just the overall enthusiasm to have fun and live life and enjoy yourself. That's what we're here to do, right? As everybody says, you only get one of these, so YOLO, right? Is that what the kids are saying? Is that still a thing, YOLO? You only live once? I haven't heard it much, but I feel like we can make that a thing. I feel like Josh Williams is the perfect guy to lead the YOLO campaign. So thanks to Josh for coming on the podcast. You also heard him mention Megan, his marketing manager. And Megan was actually great because I had posted about trying to schedule guests and just going through the list of interviews and going through my list of people I wanted to reach out to get answers back on about being on the podcast. And Megan pitched Josh. So I appreciate Megan putting her driver out there, and I'm glad she did because, once again, I really enjoyed this conversation. So thank you to both Josh and Megan for the time and the interest in being on the podcast, and I'm sure we will have him back down the road. We'll have to circle back when we get into repeat guests, and who knows, maybe we'll have to have him back because he does something big as he's aiming to do in NASCAR, so stay tuned. I hope you enjoyed the interview. I hope you will follow Josh. He told you where to find him on social media. Again, that cracked me up. His Twitter page is a lot of fun, so make sure you follow him there and go look for him on different platforms. So I hope you enjoyed it. Let me know what you think, either through social media. Again, you can find me on Twitter. My handle is at Kelly Crandall. You can also search my name in Facebook and Instagram. And if you go the Facebook route, please look for the public page, and that is where you will find links for the podcast as well as everything for racer.com. You can also support the podcast and support me through Patreon. The link for that is in the show description of this episode. It is also on social media. Or go on your Google machine and fire up www.patreon.com/Kelly Crandall. And I outline on there why I went to Patreon and the ways in which it is helping me a ton. So please go look at that when you have a chance, and I hope you consider joining. All right, let's get out of here for this week. We have two back-to-back interviews with Xfinity Series drivers. We had Ryan Vargas, we had Josh Williams. Now we're going to move on with, drumroll please, next week will be another driver. But it's an NHRA driver. We're going to go drag racing. Bob Tasca III is going to join the podcast. And my goodness, you want to talk about a good conversation. Bob takes us all inside drag racing and what he does because he's got two jobs. He's not only driving a Ford funny car, but he is selling Fords during the week. So stay tuned for that. It was a wonderful, really insightful conversation. That will be next Monday right here on the Racing Writers Podcast.